And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Victoria K. from San Ynez.
Good evening, everyone. Victoria, grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Victoria.
Thank you so much, Louisa, for honoring me by asking me to come and share with you guys. This is the second time I've been to the 1600 Club. The first time I had 3 days of sobriety, and I brought my mother up to Santa Maria for some medical stuff and said, I can't miss my new meeting. So I came here and I walked in, and the gentleman who was secretary said, oh, you're new, you're going to lead today. And I was, of course, terrified. But I was very glad he did that, because it forced me to get out of my head and get into, you know, what was going on. So presence has been the biggest gift that sobriety has given me. I have a sobriety date. It is June 7th of 2021. It was literally 1 week before my first grandchild was born, and that was the night of my spiritual experience. It was a Sunday evening. I was sitting in my home, opening, as I did on most Sunday nights, my third bottle of wine at about 7 p.m., and I just heard this voice saying to me, what would you do if Athena went into labor right now? Athena's my lovely daughter sitting over there, and it just really pulled the handbrake, because I didn't know. I knew I couldn't drive. I was already two bottles in, and it would have devastated me to not be able to be there for her. And I thought to myself, what's more important, running away from shit or actually like being present and living life and being part of, because I'd always had a problem with feeling part of. I did, of course, finish that bottle of wine because I had taken the cork out, and it would have been a shame. But as I consumed that bottle of wine, I opened up my laptop and I started looking for meetings. So, you know, I was looking around, went on the central office website and saw, you know, list. And I saw there was supposed to be a meeting the following night at the Bethania Lutheran Church in Solvang. So I'm like, I could do that. I can make it until tomorrow, 7 p.m. Yeah, I will get there. Of course, then I started having those thoughts like, but what if I see someone I know? You know, gosh. But that would be a wonderful thing, because I knew there had to be others out there. I couldn't be the only person living that way. At least, you know, that was an argument I had with myself all the time. I had that terminal uniqueness, thought that I was like somehow so different, and you know, nobody could understand the bubble I was living in, but I was just isolating myself. I drank alone. I didn't like to share my booze. I wanted to be home with no one else around, nobody bugging me, and just do my thing and get more and more miserable until I blacked out. That was like the last 10 years of my drinking career, that's what it was. It was pretty much a nightly blackout. I would white knuckle through the day, get through work, whatever I had to do, and then go home and drink until I blacked out. And I probably wasn't going to live very long if I kept doing that. And what ended up happening was life has a sense of humor. You know, my higher power would give me these little things, like lots of people that were in my life, like my first husband. He passed away at 54 of this disease. We had been divorced for a long time, but you know, it's a small town in the valley. He was from there too. One of my best friends from school passed away at 54 of this disease. My accountant in Greece passed away at 54 of this, and it's, I kind of like said, okay, I've got to make this work before I turn 55 or I'm toast. So I got to busy. I got going to meetings, and for, was it Waylon and Chris?
Yes.
Gentlemen, the people that say meeting maker, makers make it, make, ah, I can't talk. Meeting makers make it. They're right, because that's what really kept me putting one foot in front of the other, one step at a time. If I didn't show up here and listen to you guys, if I didn't allow you guys to love me until I could learn to love myself, I would have gone out and I would probably not be above ground right now. And I have lots of reasons to want to be above ground. I've got my two beautiful daughters. I've got two beautiful grandkids. I'm able to be of service in my community. I'm able to be of service to my family. And I wouldn't have had any of that had I not found this door and found these tools and found this wonderful fellowship, because I just felt so, so disconnected. And it's interesting that it took a little bit of sobriety. Unfortunately, my sponsor couldn't be here this evening because she got COVID 2 days ago, which really stinks, because she wanted to come and be part of this too. Because she was actually the first person that talked to me, because I tried to go to that meeting at Bethania at 7 p.m. on that Monday night, and the meeting wasn't happening because it was right at the end of COVID. And so I called the phone number that was on the website for central office, and the woman who picked it up said, "My name's Debbie, write my number down. If you feel like drinking tonight, call me. There's a meeting tomorrow at noon at the Alano Club." And she later became my sponsor. And she's still my sponsor, and she knows it most of the time. So anyway, I had felt just like I didn't belong. And I never drank to have fun. I drank because I wanted to change the way I felt. I drank because I wanted to stop giving a shit about what I knew all of you were thinking about me, how stupid, how incompetent, how ugly I was, and that I, was just kind of a waste of space and a waste of air. And it was interesting that I kind of figured out working the steps and things. It's an amazing journey. And I mean, I was the product of perhaps a questionable alcohol-induced decision made by two people who happened to be my parents. My mother was the babysitter. My father was a gentleman who had been divorced and had two young sons from his previous marriage, and he needed someone in Mayville, North Dakota to look after his sons because he was touring missile sites and inspecting silos. So that's how that happened. And depending on who you asked, according to my dad, my mom, the 20-year-old college student, got him drunk, seduced him so she could get pregnant and he would have to marry her. If you ask my mom, it's like, well, I told him I'm graduating soon, you better find somebody else, and he took me out to thank me, got me drunk, and he seduced me to get me pregnant so I wouldn't leave and I would stay and raise his kids. Sometime after that, I think they both panicked, and the result was that I never really felt anything warm and fuzzy in my family. At the age of 66, my oldest brother, half-brother, told me that I ruined his life by being born, because he had finally found a woman who had given him her undivided attention, because their mom was one of us. She was an alcoholic and addicted to pills. And that was very hurtful. But going over it with my sponsor and doing the work with myself, I realized, I could understand that little boy who was 7 years old and suddenly said, "I found this person who's taking care of me, and now, this baby comes along." It's really sad he hasn't been able to let that go. I wish he would be willing to find Al-Anon. He's a normie. I mean, he doesn't drink because he's afraid of it, basically. Our other brother passed away of this disease plus drugs. And so I'm kind of the only one who made it to the solution. And I'm trying to live by that today, which isn't always easy. I get in a lot of arguments with myself in my head. It's a hostile environment up here. There's all kinds of, really, really nasty repertoire going on. But I've got you guys I can turn to. If I'm feeling shitty, I can pick up the phone and I know that I can call someone who's going to understand, which was not the case when I was, actively in my disease and isolating. The few people I had left in my life that really did care about me, when I told them, I'm actually in a 12-step program and I'm working to, get and maintain sobriety, and I was embarrassed, and they're like, "Thank God." Because I had no idea what I was like when I was in blackouts. There were so many times my kids or my husband the next day would be like, "Hey, anything you'd like us to talk about?" And I was like, "Nah, I'm okay, I'm good." Just complete denial. I didn't even ask why they were asking me that question. My avoidance was so ingrained. And I would just white knuckle my day from doing it myself through the next day and then do it all over again. After, gosh, it was probably after 2 years that things started coming back from blackouts. And that was when I was like, oh, not good. I even tried to give my husband and my daughter's boyfriend a lap dance in front of her teenage friends over at our house one day, which was not stellar behavior to make. And that was like, I think that was a Sunday afternoon too. It wasn't a weekday, because otherwise I wouldn't have been drinking that early in the day. Weekends were beautiful because I got to do it all day, and I was that person that if we had people over for dinner or barbecue, I would be going around filling everybody's glasses so that no one would notice that, mine never got, empty. It was, what it was like was not pretty. And even, before my drinking ramped up, that hole in myself I had, that God-sized hole that I was trying to fill with either relationships or activities or whatever, eating disorders, lots of things, drew me to people that did not have my best interests in mind. Sort of the worst scenario of that was I met a producer who said, oh, you're perfect for this thing. I need to take you to Europe. And, you're going to make all this money. You're going to be famous. And I was fresh off the divorce from my first husband who, as a side note, the reason for our divorce was that he tried to trade me to his cocaine dealer. And I didn't feel really good about that. So I end up going with this total stranger to the passport office in LA. The guy got me a passport in 2 hours. To understand the difference between how things are today and how they were in the early 80s, all I needed was my driver's license. I was, at that time, I was 19, so I could sign. I didn't need parental permission. He got me a temporary passport, which is good for 6 months. And he just showed an airline ticket and a contract that was like a letter on a piece of paper. It wasn't, And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. Take this 19-year-old girl to Europe. Long story short, I didn't see a whole lot of Europe because most of my time I was expected to entertain older gentlemen. That was supposed to be good for my career, and it was supposed to get me financial rewards that would help me further myself in whatever. So it ended up, I was sent to the last gig in Monte Carlo, and there were two other girls, but they happened to only speak French, so they didn't speak to me at all as we were driving from Nice Airport to Monte Carlo. And we were taken to this place, into an underground elevator, and took us all the way up to the penthouse. And it turned out it was the house of an Arab who, one of the things that he sold, apart from arms and other things, was people. And if I ever had any doubt that I have a higher power, it was that experience that made me certain that something was looking out for me other than myself, a power greater than myself. Because when I got up to this penthouse, the other two girls went and sat down. There was a couch. There was a big silver bowl with white powder that, I was not much of a snowboarding fan. That was my husband's gig, my former husband's gig. But, and a bottle of Cristal on ice and a big TV with Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous telling us who our host was. But I went out on the balcony and looked at the view because this place had like an incredible view of the Mediterranean, and it was kind of a stormy sky. It wasn't like a postcard thing. This was like March. And I was just saying, wow, this is so incredible. And it started getting chilly. When I went back in, nobody was there. The other two girls were gone. The bowl was gone. The champagne was gone. The TV was off. And I was like, huh. what's going on here? And I was walking around. Hey, anybody here? Anybody here? Crickets. And I got really scared because I knew where I was. I'd heard enough from the TV to know that this is not a place you want to be. And I found this little office that had a phone, and I made a collect call to my mom. It must have been like 4 o'clock in the morning here when I made this collect call to my mother. And I just said, oh, hi, Mom. I just wanted to tell you that I love you. We're supposed to be doing a photo shoot, whatever. And, you know, but I wanted to hear your voice. And I put the phone down and I heard two people coming, and I turned around and there were these two gentlemen wearing, you know, they were big buff guys wearing suits that probably cost more than the car I was driving at the time. And they saw me and they turned pale and started screaming at each other in Arabic. So I was like, I don't know what's going on, but this is not good. And then the fellow who had driven myself and the other two girls from the airport came down, and he heard them, he saw me, and then he started screaming at them in Arabic. So I'm just like, okay, because you could see the Glocks under the arms of these expensive suits. And the other guy says, go get dressed, I'm going to take you to dinner. Anyway, long story short, the girls, I have no idea, I have an idea what happened to them, but let's just say I knew better than to push the thing. When I asked the guy, I said, oh, will the girls be joining us? And he's like, oh, no, there was a problem with their hair. We've sent them to the salon at 9 o'clock at night. Anyway, and later that evening, I met my host. And, of course, I was expected to entertain my host. And the next morning, he gave me an envelope with some money in it and a business card with a phone number on it and said, you know, if you, you know, need anything, you can call me. But if anyone asks you, I didn't give you more than this much or whatever. And I was taken to the airport. And it was, I wasn't supposed to come back from that trip. I carried survivor guilt about that trip because I did not even know those girls' names. They hadn't even introduced themselves. I tried to introduce myself and they didn't speak to me because they only spoke French. But that, I had not realized what an impact that had on me on the rest of my life from that point until I got sober, because I was carrying that. And my sponsor helped me work through that and realize that even had I known their names, which may not have been real names if they would have given them to me, there wasn't really anything that I could do. But it just brought home to me the how my choices, how any young person's choices, especially young women. I mean, sorry guys, but as women, we are born with a target on us. Right. And it doesn't matter what age we are. It doesn't matter what we look like. It does not matter where we're from. We are considered commodities by a lot of people. And when you add to that equation drugs and alcohol, things aren't good, you know. But I mean, after that experience, I mean, I had been sexually assaulted before that experience, and at, you know, the first time was at 14, simply because of the fact that I was there, and you know, I was definitely not asking for anything, but I got it whether I wanted it or not. But then, you know, that just sort of fed my feeling of not belonging, my feeling of not having value, my feeling of what's the friggin' point, you know? I'll live for today, I'll do what I can do, and yeah, I chased my tail. I chased my tail for the longest time. I saw a lot of things I can't unsee, but I had the capacity today to use those experiences to be able to connect with other people. For the last 3.5 years, I've been working with kids in middle schools and high schools here in Santa Barbara County and trying to give them tools, trying to give them, you know, an understanding about how valuable they are. Without, you know, I don't think our parents ever tell us enough. I mean, I'm very proud of my daughter because she's doing a great job of letting her kids know that they are loved. but I'm sure there's several other people sitting in this room tonight who had the experience of not feeling that from their home life as children. You know, my mother even said at one point to my kids, you know, "Oh, your mom was great. She practically raised herself." I'm like, "Oh, not practically, I did." You know, the first time I spent New Year's Eve home alone, I was 8 years old, and they gave me a bottle of Andre, you know, that shitty fake champagne or whatever. And they went to my dad's party for Lockheed Martin, and it didn't seem weird to them when they got home, and I was, you know, passed out on the kitchen floor. And that happened every New Year's Eve from that, I think that was what, 1977 until 1982? Because in 1982, that's when I met my first husband. And there was never any discussion. There was never like, "Hey, you know, what made you feel like you had to keep drinking after?" Because, you know, they bought me the bottle of Andre, but we had this whole like bar in the kids that I knew where it was. Yeah, it was interesting because my dad had even given me a bottle of Kirsch Royale cherry liqueur for Christmas. The Christmas of 1974, I think it was 8, because he forgot that it was Christmas Eve. I talked to my mom today. She still denies that my dad had a drinking problem. If you shaved my head, I would look just like my dad. And towards the end, I was drinking just like my dad, which was not pretty. I mean, she would tell me about him going to, you know, Elks functions and her having to get like 4 sturdy guys to come help her put him in the car and take him home. But he wasn't an alcoholic. And of course, when I first thought to myself, I mean, I've been living in Europe for a while because after my misadventures in LA, I moved to Greece. And I was working there, and I worked with a producer who normalized day drinking at work for me. So I already had, I was born with the addiction, the allergy rather. I fell in love with alcohol the very first time I ever tasted it, which was like 4 months before my 4th birthday when we first moved to California at a wedding reception. It was one of these things, they had that fountain with the champagne, and I saw the ladies going up there with these cute little glasses. I was like, "Wow, I wonder what that is, you know, it looks magical." So I got one of those little glasses, went up, and it was magical. I took that first drink of alcohol, and I said to myself, "Wow, I feel comfortable in my skin. I just could be there and not feel like I was a burden or I was a nuisance or I was just... this is great." At the time, that was the only place I thought I could get that feeling, was just the liquid was coming out of that fountain. Didn't take me long to figure out differently, though. Anyway, it was such a relief when I found these doors, walked through to my first meeting on that... Tuesday, actually, because the Bethania meeting on Monday night wasn't happening. Walked in the door, again, the gentleman there, Mark B. in Solvang, some folks may know him, said, "Oh, you're new. You're going to go first." And just part of me wanted to take that as being, like, pointed out or being, you know, targeted or whatever. But part of me was like, no, this is an invitation for me to participate. This is an opportunity for me to actually, like, interact with other humans. Not because I have to, because I'm getting paid. Not because I'm wasted and I want to get more wasted. But because... with these people, I can actually be myself. I don't have to pretend anymore. I don't have to put on some kind of mask, because that's what I was doing all the time, was masking. I was masking my depression. I was masking my anxiety. I was masking my terror of human relationships. And when I finally found this place, I'm like, you know, that feeling I used to get with the first drink, you know, which was like, you know. Now I get it when I go to a meeting. I come here to take my medicine, because if I don't come here and get the message from you guys, I'm not going to be okay. Yeah, I was at that point where I would go to all the different places I could buy alcohol because I was afraid they would start clocking the frequency and the quantity with which I acquired it. And where I was living, I was within walking distance of four different venues. I could go to Houston's Liquor, I could go to Parkway Market, I could go to Albertsons, and I could go to CVS. So I would, rotate. There were a couple times when I managed to, go to each place in the same day, and then I'm like, oh, that's not good. There were times I drove to Lompoc to the Albertsons there to get a box of wine, and I'm like, maybe this way I can, I can continue fooling myself, because the only person I was fooling was me, nobody else. I would do the thing of having the box of wine hidden in my closet, and I would have a bottle that I would go and I would refill. It's like, no, this is the same bottle I was drinking earlier. Yeah, all that stuff, all those machinations. Oh my gosh. I think my grandest moment was, here I am, a woman in my 50s, living in my mother's home because she has health issues, and so I have to race up to Parkway, which, takes me maybe 9.5 minutes to walk there. And I'm like, oh, I can't, I don't want Mom to know that I'm going back. So I actually, there were times when I would wear a big jacket, and as I was leaving Parkway, I would put one bottle in each sleeve so I could walk like this and go in the house, and my mom wouldn't, 50 freaking years old, and my mom, I didn't want my mommy to see me. I didn't want the bottles to clink together and rat me out. That's sick fucking behavior. For anybody, but I mean, for me, it was like, I was, at that time, I was the chair of the Behavioral Wellness Committee for the County of Santa Barbara. I was, attending Zoom meetings with a coffee mug full of Pinot Noir at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. At least I was wearing pants, most of the time. But, yeah, I mean, my gratitude for this program and the wonderful human beings I've met here, I've even come to appreciate guys a little bit more, because here I've actually met real gentlemen out in the world. There are a lot of, not just wolves in sheep clothing, monsters in sheep's clothing. Yeah. I did not meet Jeffrey Epstein, but when I was in LA, I met Heidi Fleiss, who was the Mayflower Madam, and a lot of other people that were not, they, if you looked at what they were wearing and, expensive cars, expensive homes, this, that, and the other thing, but they were soulless. And every single person I've met in these rooms has a soul, a beautiful soul, and we're all in this process of growing together, actually growing as human beings. It's like, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and I love the things like the barbecues and stuff that happen, and you see people bringing their families. I get to do that. I get to be present today. I get to breathe. I get to be upright. I'm above ground. Yay. Because the way I was drinking, that wasn't going to, it wasn't going to continue for long. And I even had, once in a blackout, I almost choked to death. And they, I'm going to be 5 in June. And an old timer told me when I first came in, on your 5th birthday, you get your first marble back. So, I've had stuff coming back from blackouts, but one of the things that was, shook me was one evening I had, the kids were in bed, my husband was asleep, I was grading papers in the kitchen and had almost a gallon of wine. And as I'm wont to do, when I binge drink, I want to binge eat too. And I had, there was some tortellini and I was woofing it down, with that. And I literally Heimlich'd myself on the back of a wooden kitchen chair and then passed out on the floor. And when I came to a couple hours later, what did I do? I spit out the partially chewed tortellini that was in my mouth. I cleaned up the mess. I went and I washed my face and I crawled into bed because I didn't want anybody to know. It didn't dawn on me what had happened. And like a couple days later, I had this horrible bruise across my diaphragm and I couldn't remember what had happened. I didn't know what it was from. I was like, shit, am I hemorrhaging? What's going on? But I was too embarrassed to go to the medical center. So when it came back to me, that was one of the first gifts of sobriety too, was starting to remember things from blackouts. I was like, I could have died. My kids could have come out to get up for school and found me on the kitchen floor. And my whole concern was, how can I cover up this mess? You know, how cats bury their shit. That's what I was doing all the time. All the time. Today I can own my shit. And it's not always pleasant. It's not easy. But it's real. And I get to be a human who's part of. I get to be present. I get to make mistakes and remember them and learn from them. And I get to stay teachable and learn from you guys because you've got a lot to share with me. So, again, I'm very, very grateful and very honored to be here with you. And thank you for letting me share with you. Thank you.
All right, let's give Victoria another round of applause.